So back in 2019, I was in a process of leaving our ministry in Haiti and trying to figure out what God was doing in my life. And a lot of different things going on. But that spring, right before I took my next step, we had our interns come for an intern retreat. And at that point in time, I did the Myers-Briggs personality test with our interns and started discussing personalities. And one of the young people raised their hand and said, "Hey, what about the Enneagram?" And I said, "Okay, let's explore that." So that weekend, I did my first Enneagram survey to understand my Enneagram number and kind of start exploring this. Well, a couple months later, I walked away from that ministry, had a little bit of break, and started into another ministry locally. Was excited and passionate about what it was. And I met with the executive director, and as we started working through things, we started talking about the Enneagram and personality assessments and where people were at. And, you know, I had done quite a number of different studies, knowing that I was gifted in a particular way for fundraising and relationship development and different things. But my friend and colleague, Jason, labeled me an 8 on the Enneagram. And I was like, "Wait a minute, I don't think that's right." And so it actually spun me into about a year and a half deep study of the Enneagram and where I was at on the spectrum. But it also made me realize as I walked through this, really why I functioned the way I functioned in my last ministry and how I was broken and how I needed the Lord's healing as a part of the process of walking through the season. Because I realized that when you kind of go deep in the roots of where you're at, you realize what drives you and what drives you to do certain things well and what drives you to do certain things not so well, and what that means for those who you work with and around, and how that impacts lives. So for me, I really came down to I'm an Enneagram 7, Wing 8, and so it's fun to understand that in a deeper way. But my 7-ness came out when I was under stress as a 1. So I would be a perfectionist, and I would be demanding, and I would be all those things that happen with a 1 that are not the healthy side of a 1. So for everybody in the room that's done the Enneagram, raise your hand. So for those of you that have not, I would highly encourage you to, because I probably just spoke a foreign language to you, but we're also going to go through part of it today. Because one of the exciting parts for me, and this is actually something that I've become even more passionate about, this is the first workshop I've done on this subject. Because I think it's such a neat arena, but it's also something that impacts giving and stewardship and relationships when it comes to fundraising. Personality-driven fundraising and giving. Now, if anyone wants to pay for my graduate school, there's really no studies out being done on this at this time. And I would love to explore that. So from this perspective, I'm coming to you with my own perspective for working the last 20 years with donors. So there's no empirical studies, and there's no, you can debate me and we can talk about it later, whether you feel like you're an Enneagram 3 and that really, this giving situation matches you, okay? I'm completely open to that. But I think it's important for us to understand personalities when we start talking about giving and how to work in relationships with other people. Because, one, you'll understand how you work better, right? But you'll understand the motivations of those who are around you as you start to engage them. Now, Ian Morgan Cron, that wrote The Road Back to You, that I've listened to more than, you know, times than I can remember, will say you don't judge somebody else's personality, right? And I think that's more in a you don't use it in a relationship. Like with Lexi, I can't say you're one, you just act that way all the time and you'll never get past this. And by the way, I failed in that arena with my wife, who is a one, so I know better, right? So anyways, I'm really excited about sharing this with you guys today and looking through this. So for those who are new to the Enneagram is kind of is a historical approach to personalities, but it's more based around understanding the drivers and the motivations and how you can adapt your personality based upon your functions with teams and those who are around you. I should have actually written out a definition for the Enneagram. I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
Would you spell the word for me, please?
Yes. And I should have done that as well. See, I'm learning. This is my first time presenting this.
I kind of understand what you're saying, but
It's E-N-N-E-A-G-R-A-M.
Enneagram. So if you want to read probably one of the best books on it, it's The Road Back to You by Ian Morgan Cron, and I can give you that reference later. But it's one of the best deep dives in understanding personalities and what motivates you to do what you do, how you do it, and the reasons behind that. There's three different segments of this personality. And we'll go into that. So I'm starting kind of out of order, but I'm also starting with this. I love this. How many of you have seen Inside Out? Yep. Love the movie. So you have anger on the left. For those who have not seen this, you should go watch it. You know, anger when he gets really like going, his head blows out the top and fire and all those things. You have fear, and then you have joy, and you have disgust, and you have sadness. And those all feed into the personalities as we go through this, but I just love this slide, so I wanted to share it. It's more for me. So the reformer is the number one. You know, the personality number one is the reformer. Usually people start with the 8 or the 9 and kind of work their way around. I started with the 1, too numerically ordered. They are rational, idealistic type, principled, purposeful, self-controlled, and perfectionist. So many times the reformer will be known as a perfectionist. Now, there are some differences within some of the personalities. Sixes kind of look like ones at times, but there's a different driver with a six than a one. But you know you're married to a one if you load the dishwasher, you're all finished loading the dishwasher, and you step a foot away, and your wife comes behind you and reorganizes the dishwasher. That's somebody just know it. But they are reformers. Like they jump in to, they want to see things done the right way and justice happen. So they're not going to like just let unjust things happen. So that's why they get the name reformer, because they want to see not only things done right, like, oh my goodness, ones are the people that want everything right. Ones also are one of the numbers on the Enneagram that don't like to talk about the Enneagram. Because why do they need the Enneagram? Because they're perfect and everything's good and like it's right. So it took my wife a year and a half of discussion and some good friends getting really excited about the Enneagram. And my good friends Joe and Candace and I standing around in a circle talking about the Enneagram before my wife would start reading the book, because she wanted to be included. Because she's like, I don't need that. Like, this is how things work. And this is how... and so they're really rational and idealistic type. They're principled and they're perfectionist. And their driver is anger. And so that's an interesting perspective, because the 8, 9, and 1's drivers are anger. And so what they do is they suppress that anger to push forward the perfectionist types. But they're also more inwardly angered because they can't be perfect. They take their anger focus inward on themselves. So that's what the reformer is. Their motivation for giving is to make things right. So they want to give to things that are going to change the dynamic and make it right. So reformers are those who want to give to sex trafficking because it makes things right. You know, they want to be able to switch the dynamic with their giving. You know, yes, it has to be passionate, it has to be personal, but they want to make things right. So it's not going, you know, things that don't resonate in that realm, they're not really going to give to. So if you're working with a donor that you can identify as a one, you are in their house and everything is laid out perfect on the, you know, dinner table in, you know, the precise fashion, and, you know, all the things are, you know, checkbox, and you can identify that they have that personality trait, you need to look for those things that can really change and reform whatever's happening. And so with my wife, it has been that way all along. It's like, how can we right the wrongs? So she's passionate about prayer and prayer ministry, because for the last 2 decades, we've been involved in local church work. And, you know, Acts 2:42 is, you know, fellowship, prayer. Now I'm forgetting the verse. But it's one of those where it's like the one thing that's missing is that passionate prayer in that world, is that people are not being transformed in the image of God because we don't take prayer seriously. So her mindset is that reformer mindset of, we're not doing this well, and there's better tools out there, and God can give us the space to dwell with him and be transformed if we do it better, right? If we do it differently than the way we've done it. That's her reformer mindset in that. So that's her passion and her drive. And so as you work with donors and you identify that one, it's what within your ministry is that change reformer aspect that is making a difference. Within what we do at NAMI Congo, it's the fact that we have a village savings and loan program and women's ministry that is impacting those generations. It's different than the way missions has been done for so many years. That gets her excited, because you see within our village savings and loan program, you see 30 ladies trained, 126 groups launched. You see women in the village being able to make a living and being able to support their families. You see the impact of not continual generational poverty in the way it has been. You see this reformer change in what we're doing with village savings and loan. So that's what gets ones excited, is to see that opportunity to make that difference. The two, the helper. These are the people that when somebody has an illness in church and they need a meal, they don't just bring them a meal. They bring them a meal, they bring them breakfast for the next morning, and they bring them 2 gift cards. Because, you know, this, they need the meal, but, oh, yeah, like, they're not going to have anything for tomorrow morning. And what about tomorrow night? And, like, maybe they want to go out to dinner because they have this need. There are the people in your churches that are the ones that, depending on your dynamic, are the ones who are making blankets to send to Haiti because they're passionate that people need clothing and this is something they can do to help. Or blankets. So they are the ultimate in helpers. They will show up They will go the extra mile. They will drop whatever they're doing to make sure that they help. That's their passion and their thrust. They're caring, interpersonal types, generous, people-pleasing. You know, they are somewhat possessive in the fact that, like, they want to help, and this is how they want to help. And if you don't want my help, like, that's somewhat sometimes offensive, because this is their love language. They need to help. They need to help and do this. So my wife is a one wing too. So she's on one hand, she wants everything to be right, and then at the drop of the hat, she'll wing two and she'll be there for everybody. But Justine, who's on our team in Malawi, is a two. And so she's one of our team members, and she loves to help, and she loves to be there for people and to impact people's lives. And so you probably can categorize this through a number of different people that you know. Maybe it's your mom, maybe it's your aunt, maybe it's you, that just loves that aspect. And it's not just good enough to do one step. You have to do three steps through this process. So they want to go to the extra mile to give of themselves. And so if you can show them a tangible way to be involved, but also give, that's going to be meaningful to them. That's going to fit their personality and their gift set. Is that, yes, you can ask them for money and you can ask them for gifts, but if you can find a way for them to help you in the process, that's going to be more meaningful for them. Will they give you the funds that you need? Yes, because they believe in what you're doing. But they also want to help physically. So this weekend, we are doing this celebration this evening. And we did a dinner last night as a board. I did nothing in the way of physical preparation. I didn't order food. I haven't set tables. Linda Tyler would be a good definition of a two in my mind, because she's always wanting to be helpful. She's always like, call Linda, and Linda's like, yes, I'll make sure the food's there. I'll make sure the tables. Like, I didn't think about table settings last night when we came to our board meeting. Like, Linda had taken care of it. You know, she called me, asked a few questions, and put together everything tonight. So they're great people. They will give of themselves, and they will give to your ministry. But if you can find a tangible way for them to be involved, they're going to go the extra mile in that way. One of the things that I've been in the process of rolling out is a program for twos for our ministry called Make It for Malawi. One of the things that we try to do is be sustainable in our work in Malawi. And so it's not importing a lot of products there for different things. But I'm like, you know, there are those who are involved in churches and places around the country that would say, I'll crochet, dishcloths, and I'll make it for Malawi. You know, I'll give the proceeds of what I sell to Malawi so we can empower the women. You know, I'll make little dresses and sell them at the craft bazaar. So I'll make it for Malawi. So that kind of mindset of helping people engage in your work by giving them a tangible way. Last ministry I was in Haiti, we did an infant care kit. We had one church that just packed up 60 of them. All the supplies we needed, everything we needed to do that. And that's a good way to engage helpers. Threes on the Enneagram are the achievers. They're fun people. They're just fun to be around. They're fun to work with. They're challenging. Jason Chenoweth, who I mentioned earlier, one of my former colleagues, is a three on the Enneagram. And he's just a blast. He's one that will motivate you, challenge you, will push you to the next level, but he wants to achieve. They're success-oriented, pragmatic type, adaptive, excelling, driven, and image-conscious. That's an interesting subject with threes, because threes that are unhealthy, it has become about them, and it becomes about how they are viewed by other people. So pastors are often threes because they're that achieving type, but they're very also, they want people to see them in a certain way. They want people to believe in them in a certain way. Ryan on our team in Malawi is a three. And Ryan is the director of our community development programs and our coffee farm and our sustainable coffee farm. And Ryan is passionate and he is driven, very, very intelligent, has wonderful leadership skills, but he's also very driven. And so you have to kind of hook onto the wagon and hold on while Ryan runs. And same with Jason. And one of the problems with threes can be that they run off the road because they run so fast, they don't bring everybody with them, and they push that hard. But they're definitely the achievers, so they want to get behind successful efforts and willing to take risks when it comes to giving. Threes are one of those people that you love to have as donors because they're willing to take the risk, but they want to be on board with successful projects that you're working on. They're the ones that you want to spend probably more time with, just having conversations about what you're doing and garnering knowledge from them and passion from them, than even funding resources from them. The relationships that you can have with threes to drive your ministry forward is incredible. And I have some really wonderful guys around me that are threes that every time I'm taking another step in ministry, whether it's with NAMI Congo or my personal life, I sit down with them. Neil, David, and a couple other guys. Because they're the ones that are driving to the next steps. But they also want to get involved financially, and they have the giving capacity. Because these are some of the most successful people you'll know. Because that's their mindset. They're driven to success. They're driven to succeed. Fours. The individualist. Do we have any individualists in here from the Enneagram? We've got one. I should have started asking that with each number instead of the fours. The individualist. My friend John Durgan is an individualist. John is a wonderful guy. John is unique in a lot of different ways. But individualists are sensitive. They're somewhat withdrawn type, expressive, dramatic, passionate. They sometimes can be temperamental. They're a unique being. They're the ones that I'd love to have as friends because they make life exciting when they are passionate and outgoing. Individualists, the fours believe, and this is in general, all of these are in general, okay, that nobody's like them, right? That they are completely unique unto themselves. If you try to point out the fact that there's somebody else like them, they're like, oh no, that's me, yeah. John is an airline mechanic. He is a fashion designer. He is the most flamboyant guy I know on Instagram. He loves Jesus. I mean, he truly is like over the top in so many different ways. But, they're passionate to causes that they can identify with. Because of their uniqueness in who they are and how they function, once they are passionate and they can identify with what they connect to, because they don't connect well with the general society overall. They feel unique. They feel out of place sometimes. But once they connect to something they identify with, they are so passionate about it. So John connects with our local Christian theater company. John is passionate about our local Christian theater company. John will raise money. He will go out of his way. He will do all these different things because it's something he can identify with that is unique. It's different. It's not normal. in different ways. And so that's the individualist. The five is the investigator. The investigator, Matt, are you a five? I think Matt might be a five.
I'm a little bit of a cheater.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Matt's a CPA. He's our treasurer on our board of directors. But fives are those that, you know, they want to know all the details. And they want to know, they want to research and research and research. They're the ones that will love to spend hours and hours understanding how things work and why they work the way they work. They're the investigators. And they're the ones that you love to have at different times and hate them at other times. they're intense. They're the cerebral type, perceptive, innovative, somewhat isolated, secretive. You know, they don't want people to know what they know a lot of times. But they give to work that all have their ducks in a row. If they can see that you are, that you actually have that all put together, that they can, you have your financial statement. And when you look at the financial statement, you go, oh, yeah, that all makes sense. They'll give to that. That they want to see the fact that they can know you and understand how you do things, why you do things. You don't have to be perfect, but you have to be transparent and you have to have your ducks in a row. For fives to really engage in you and giving. And so that's the essence of a five in that realm. I have a friend, Jared, who's a five. He loves to see all the ducks in a row. And really, you can get, as Jared and I were talking about this, you can see him engage when you can get past the numbers and you can get to the heart level with him. If he can see your ducks in a row and you can get to the heart level with him of what you're doing, then he's all in. Because he knows that how you're going to handle what you handle is right. And he loves what you do. The six is the loyalist. Now, the loyalists are fun. They're a little scary too. My daughter, who does the cake decorating, is a six. Many people want to label her as a one because of the detailed, perfectionistic mindset of how she handles cake decorating in artistic format. But her sickness is not sickness. Whew. Her six is driven by the fact and the fear of what people will think if it's not perfect. So her driver is fear of what other people will think. So when she starts to engage, she engages all in. She doesn't multitask well. Sixes are the reason that, and I've said this for years, and you can debate me on this. Sixes are why we have 50-member churches all over the U.S. because they're loyalists. Their grandma, their great-grandma, their great-great-grandma, you know, we're in this church, and we're staying with this church. The preaching's bad, the worship's bad, but we're staying engaged in this church because this is our church. And this has been our church for four generations. They're the loyalists. So the reason you have all these small churches around the U.S., at least in my mindset, is because sixes are loyal to that congregation in that situation. And so in some ways you could say that's good. Other ways you may not think that. They're long-haul givers. They're slow to commit, but once they commit, they will give forever. These are wonderful people to have. They typically take step one in getting to know you, getting to understand you. It takes a long time for them to warm up. We talked with my daughter for 3 years about where God was leading her on her next steps. Once God worked, it was off and she's fully committed, right? But these are your long-haul givers that will stay with you through thick and thin, through leadership changes, through every disaster you go through. They were the first people to give to the church during COVID last year. You know, COVID doesn't matter. This is what I do. I give to the church. I give my tithe. This is what I do. So sixes are in that fashion. My fear with our younger generation, Gen Z, is that if you are a six, the church has functioned over the years because of faithful givers and generosity, and a lot of those being sixes, a lot of those being other personalities. But how do sixes look at the church moving in the future? That's an interesting question. I don't know. Because are they going to be as passionate as the baby boomer generation or the greatest generation above them? Or are they going to be like, yeah, the church is okay, but this ministry is really making an impact, and I'm going to go there and give my tithe there. So that's an interesting process to work through when it comes to sixes. Sevens, if we can change, are the enthusiasts. They're the ones that want to be a part of everything. They have the fear of missing out. They want to be front and center on everything. They are excited to travel. Anything exciting they want to do. They are the fun people to invite to the party. These are the people you think of first when you go, yeah, we're going to go do something crazy. Let's invite Cameron. Let's go do that. You know, they're the life of the party in a lot of ways. And they are driven by fear like the sixes. So they have the fear of missing out, the fear of not being a part of things. They always want to be included. But they're passionate. They are able to communicate. They love people. And they love being around. So if you can engage them in ways that get them involved with people and other ways, they get involved in exciting things. You know, they want to give, but they want to give to something that is life-changing and different. Not the same normal, oh yeah, this is what we do. Like, no, tell me about the exciting next thing that you're envisioning about what God's doing in your ministry. Tell me about where you're being stretched and where you need resources. Yeah, I understand you have a base and you need to cover your base. But I'm going to get excited when you cast the vision for traveling to Indonesia and starting a business in the slums of Indonesia and reaching unreached people group that have no witness to them. You know, that's what's going to get me excited. One of my passions beyond my current work in Nami Congo is unreached people groups around the world. I love to see that because I know the impact of the gospel in those regions of the world, and it's exciting. It's exciting to think about people starting a cafe and an unreached people group to be able to start discipleship groups and Bible training and translation. That's exciting to me. Don't tell me about XYZ orphanage that we're still working in Haiti for the next 40 years. There's other people that will be excited about that, but not me. Because that's just kind of, okay, it's good. It's good. But it's not going to make me want to give. So sevens give to exciting, challenging things. The eights around us. My best friend Joe is an eight. Joe is an engineer. Joe spent 23 years with Chrysler and launched one of their largest Chrysler plants in Indiana and oversaw it before jumping over to Amazon, and now he's an executive with Amazon and oversees half of the Amazon facilities across the U.S. Joe's a challenger. Joe's fun, but he's also going to challenge everything that comes down the path. And for those that don't like to be challenged, you're not going to like hanging out with eights. Like, that's their mindset. They drive and they drive and they drive and they drive. And because they see a vision and a future that oftentimes other people can't see. and it as an Enneagram 8. They are also more like the anger from inside out. They have explosive attitudes at times and behaviors. They're the ones that can kind of blow off at any moment, and you hope you're not standing in the middle of it. I've had this with my friend Joe. It has not been directed at me, praise the Lord. He's a great Christian guy. If you get underneath an eight's exterior push and drive and challenge, they're usually big teddy bears, and that's Joe. But it's fun being with them, but they want to give to the big projects. They want to give to the game changers. You know, anything Joe does is big. So, okay, he has a hobby farm outside of Kokomo. Well, that's good. Like, you know, we do this, we do that. Well, he wanted to do a master's degree. Well, they didn't have high speed where he lived. So he decides to go contract with AT&T, and now he has five fiber optic lines to go into his house. And he provides point-to-point service all over the eastern side of the county. You know, he has a small two-acre plot out back, and he sees the momentum for CBD in across the country, but also in Indiana. So now he has a hemp field, and they're processing CBD. And he's one of those that he sees the challenge and he runs after it. And they're excited about big projects. He and I are working on a big project, but it's amazing to see his processing about how he handles things and how he moves. But they are going to be the ones, when you sit down across the table from them as a donor, you better be ready, because they're not going to do anything that isn't going to challenge the next level. So my good friend Mark is an eight. And Mark, during 2010, I was serving with a ministry in Haiti. And I was up on the North Coast on January 12th when the quake hit in Haiti. And so myself, my wife, my five-year-old, my seven-year-old, first family mission trip, setting on the North Coast of Haiti during the largest earthquake, one of the largest in the world, in the history of the world. And as we processed through that, and you know, we did a 72-hour journey home to get home and all that, not more than the time that I landed did my friend Mark reach out to me. Mark at the time was VP of one of the largest companies in Indianapolis. And he goes, "I have an idea." And Mark is an eight. He likes to challenge the norm. Many of you have heard that Indianapolis has the Indianapolis Mini Marathon every spring right before the Indianapolis 500. His company sponsors the Indianapolis Mini Marathon. He's like, "I have an idea. I want to challenge the norm." He goes, "I can work it out with the race organizers that I can start at the very back of the pack, and that we raise a penny for every person passed that I pass during the race." We called it Run, Mark, Run. And we pushed out, and he just pushed forward. I mean, he ran and ran and ran. He was a runner already, but I mean, the mentality of fundraising for this that he had is incredible, because he's an eight. He focuses on that. And ended up, by the time the race was over and they calculated the number of people passed, he raised $45,000. And so that's what you get with eights, is you get this challenger mindset that will push you past anything that you can imagine. And it's fun, but it's challenging as a fundraiser to work with them. You have to be ready for them. The nines are the peacemakers. I love my peacemaker friends. They are somewhat of a chameleon, because oftentimes you can't tell that they are actually a peacemaker. They somewhat are shy. They want to bring peace, obviously, to everything that they're involved with. They suppress their anger. They're driven by anger, but they suppress it to the point where it just goes away. So you have to, when you're working with peacemakers as donors, that's an interesting dynamic because they really come down to, they give to your greatest needs once affinity is built. They have to have that affinity to whatever project that you're working on. And that kind of goes across the board with all these personalities, but more so for nines because they are ones that just kind of step in and guide the process and want to have a peaceful resolution to everything. And so if they can see that this is something that fits within their family, like they don't want to do something outside the norm. Like when it comes to giving, they want to give to things that are inside the norm that are an affinity for their family. So they're not going to push you to, and you're not going to be able to push them. You're going to have to go with them to wherever they want to land with what you do and how you do it. Because they just don't move that direction naturally. So there's only nine, which you can thank me for. But, you know, for me, it really comes down to your identity, your motivation plus your passions equal power giving. You know, your personality, your identity of who you are, and your motivation for that, and your passions is going to be your power givers, right? You can have an eight that doesn't have the motivation for what you do or the passion for what you do, and it's not going to work. You can have a reformer who has this passion and motivation for change, or a motivation for changing the world, and they have a passion for sex trafficking, and they're going to flip upside down and be your power giver, right? They're going to be the ones that push you forward because that personality, the motivation behind changing things, and the passion for that area of ministry that you're involved in is going to give you that power giver that changes the dynamics of what you do. And those are fun to work with. And those tend to be your really long-term relationships as long as you can do everything that we talked about earlier. If you don't, then they're just going to go boom and done. So with that, that's the end of this session. So questions?
How long does it take you to identify, if you're trying to do this, where someone is on the level of the, on the Enneagram scale? I mean, do you think it's just a matter of getting good? Some people are just better at it, or how long do you think it takes to do that?
Well, one, you need to really sit down and study the Enneagram and understand personalities. And that will take some time. I mean, you know, you may have done the surveys, but if you really haven't sat down and studied it, you should. That's the first step. And then it just depends on, you know, we have this discussion. We have one major donor at NAMI Congo right now. Sean's met, but he won't return calls from myself or Ben or anybody else. So we've never met him. So I don't know what is, you know, and there are private donors that you'll never meet, like your entire life. They'll find you some way, somehow, and you won't know them. You know, they'll give you $10,000 here, $20,000 there. I had a hedge fund advisor in Chicago one time. He'd drop $50,000 every 6 months. I never met him. He didn't want any communication. And so there's some dynamics like that. But when you're working on a regular relationship and a regular donor cycle, I would say it probably is about, if you're meeting with them every quarter, it's probably, or more often than that, if you don't know them long-term as like a childhood friend and different things like that, it's probably going to take you about a year to really get to know that donor and understand their personality, understand their passions, understand what their, you know, where they're headed with this aspect of giving and understanding their personalities.
Are there certain questions you ask that are helpful in, like, getting them to kind of explain some things about themselves to help, you know, understand someone's?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it comes down to, I mean, there's basic observation. Like I said, if I'm in a kitchen with donors and I see the wife, like, fix, you know, there's some of those things with certain personalities, like ones that are very easy to pick up. There's certain things with fours that are easy to pick up. Fives are a little harder to identify sometimes as investigators, but the longer you get to know them, the more the investigators will ask you more questions and more questions and more questions. And so then you go, oh yeah, they're researching. Like, and they're the ones that pull up the financial statements, and you'll go to meet with them, and you'll say, oh yeah, this and this, and they'll go, oh yeah, I saw it in your 990. And you're going, okay, yep, they're researching us. And so some of those is just those interpersonal dynamics of relationships, but also then about their family and how they function. And so there's not specific questions. Like, I don't have a list of specific questions that I could give you to say, this is how you identify, like, have a discussion, identify a one, you know, or a two. More of it is ongoing conversation, understanding the Enneagram, and then just working, you know, typically CEOs of companies fall into an eight or a three. And so you kind of land in that zone, and then you kind of see where their driver are. You can find it through profession. Nurses, twos. Like, hands down, if you're a nurse 90% of the time, I would say that you're a two. Now, that may vary a little bit because of different circumstances in your life, but typically they grew up in that helper mentality, or anybody that works in a nursing home or that, you know. So you can kind of do it by profession, but then you can do it by interaction with them, with their spouse, and how they look at things. And I could probably develop a checklist off of each one and say, if they do this, check. If they do this, check. And that may be a good, helpful step for myself and all of you as well. So. Anybody disagree with anything I've presented? I'm seriously open. Like I said, there's no research studies out there that I can find on personality and giving. Some of you may be ones and you identify. Some of you may be threes or twos or fives from your. Do I have any fives? Yeah. So does it resonate?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You're a five. Did it resonate? Yeah.
You know, in my personal experience, I learned pretty early on that if I just went in and just presented one need, I got a few responses. But if I put out four or five in different kinds of needs, that I had more responses. That actually some people are drawn to certain things. And what you're saying is you're giving me a rationale of why that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew that if I only put one thing out, I might get a couple of people, but if I put several different things out, I had a whole lot more response.
So one of our best donors right now at NAMI Congo is a judge. And he's fun to work with because as a judge, he's prototypical eight, but he's retired. But he wants to see things that are challenging. He wants to meet challenging needs. When I call him up and say, hey, we need this for a transformer because we're out of power, he sees that as a challenge, right? And he's going to step in and meet that need. And so there's fun, but I think professions are a big part of this. Different personalities are drawn to different professions, but then seeing the interactions with their family members and with you can understand that even more. And some people don't understand their own personality, so you have kind of have to figure it out as you walk through it. Some take longer.
Cameron, I can see benefit with with this tells really get to know mm-hmm. people and these different characteristics that would be part of who a person is. Personally, though, I wouldn't like the idea of thinking that someone might be pigeonholing me
sure.
into an idea. That's the one thing about the numbers that sometimes kind of bother me. And so I just wonder, coming back to Sean's earlier question, how do we keep this from becoming something that would be manipulative, that we, you know,
yeah.
we say, okay, this is what you are, and here's how I'm going to handle it.
Yeah, but I think we do that in every relationship that we have. I'll just be honest. You know, I think we do that with, like, we may not use numbers or names, but we do this with every relationship we have. I mean, you were a senior pastor for 35 years?
40 years.
41. See, I but you did this every day with everybody in your congregation. You understood who they were, and you worked with them in not a manipulative way, but just understanding how they function and what makes them happy. And, you know, you figured out who your twos were pretty fast as helpers, because they're the ones that were always ready to step up. So we do it, I think, on a daily basis. It's just as you work with donors, it helps you not take missteps with donors. It helps you be more strategic in how you work in relationship with them, so that you can meet where they're at. You can meet them closer to where they're at, instead of trying to pull them to a place that doesn't fit who they are. If it's always about your needs and trying to pull a donor to what you need, versus meeting the donor where they're at and what drives their personality and what drives their passions and their motivations, then you're going to have that long-term relationship that really blesses them and their resources and their stewardship for kingdom work, but also ends up meeting the needs that you have as a ministry. If you focus in on the needs you have, and that's the driver for how you develop relationships and do fundraising, that's going to be short-lived, and you're going to be short-lived as a development person, as a fundraiser. So,
I think in the context, too, of the goal of what we're trying to do is raise funds, it's okay to apply numbers and fit people. I do think, I agree with you some when, I think if you look at, some of the people look at the Enneagram, they're like, hey, the goal of the Enneagram is not to just place a number on somebody, it's to help you learn more about yourself. So like, I'm not going to go to my wife and be like you, I think someone said before you, I'm like, oh, there's your three going again. You know, it's more about, okay, I got to recognize she's a three, so I need to change my response a little bit and take a step back. You know, I think it's to help you understand and how you can be your best person too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I think the difference, and I'll speak to Lydia's comment about the MBTI, is the biggest difference for me with the Enneagram is it adjusts who I am. Like, it doesn't just define who I am. It makes me realize my weaknesses and how I need to change to work better with other people. And so that's the fun part of the Enneagram, is that I have grown more in the last 3 years because of my understanding of personalities and who I am. I didn't think in my mid-40s, like, I would be at this stage where I'm like, whoa, that was my motivation behind this, and that's why I acted this way. But this is why we're fighting about this. And having these conversations. And it's been a healthy experience for our family and for my wife and for us as we work towards life and ministry together. So if you don't value it for fundraising, value it for your relationships, because it can make an ultimate impact in how you approach things. And so for me, a seven takes everything personally. Well, what do you think when you're doing fundraising? Like, the definition of taking it personally is putting yourself out there and asking somebody for money, right? Well, if I take everything personally, every time I get rejected, I'm going to take that personally. But even in my discussions with my family, like, I mentally slow down my thought process now about what is being said and whether that's personal or whether that's feelings of where they're at, and it's not a personal thing. And so you have to start, you have to understand yourself better in those ways across the spectrum of your life. And so the Enneagram has helped me in that way, and I think it helped others that way. It's helped me be better husband, father, but also fundraiser in the process of it. So.
I can't help but think that this would also be helpful, because if you're a 1, 2, 3, whatever number you are, and you're asking for funds, you may end up gravitating to projects or presenting in a way that is attractive to you,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily to the person you're speaking to.
Right.
That can be a problem. So you have to learn how to be able to be on their side rather than just your side.
Yeah, and when I work with board of directors, I typically will tell them that a person in this fundraising field that typically excels are 7, 8s, and 3s on the spectrum. So they're the enthusiasts because they love the interpersonal relationships and the outgoing things. So they're the challengers because fundraising is challenging, and they love the challenge of raising funds. Or they're that achiever. They want to push forward with that. It's not that others couldn't be good at it, and it's not that you shouldn't do it. Like, you just have to understand that there are things that you have to learn and practice and kind of push forward. And it really depends on, you know, I've met extroverts who are 2s that are really good fundraisers. Now, if you're an introvert and you're a 2, that may be challenging. So extrovertedness in this process is helpful. I'm more center of the line than I used to be. I used to be off the chart extrovert. And over the years, I've kind of come back to the center of the line. And, you know, these definitions, like Robert was saying, aren't always 100%. Like, there's variations across all of this. And there's so many variations. But one of the reasons I love to do what I do is I'm a 7-wing 8. I'm an enthusiast with a challenger mindset. So you put up a roadblock in front of me, I'm going to figure out how to move past it. So when my wife thinks everything's perfect as a 1, I challenge that. That doesn't always go well for me. So we've learned that over the last 3 years. Like, you know, it's like, okay, this isn't a hill to die on, and I really shouldn't challenge this, and she's right. By the way, any of the guys who are either in a relationship or thinking about relationships in this room, your future wife is always right. So just be aware. So.
Because when you think you're right, you end up being wrong. So.
Exactly.
You might have been actually right, but you were wrong.
Justin, you could edit that out, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. 10 minutes.
For more content like this, go to lcu.edu.